It has been a very crazy month. It has been a crazy 6 months, actually. The Jewish Life Photo Bank, our countrywide campaign for Agunot, our Agunot video, and the latest, the campaign for awareness and breaking the silence surrounding child sexual abuse, has made this the busiest time ever at Chochmat Nashim.
I'm so proud of the work we do, Anne. I'm honored at the opportunity to do it, and I'm grateful to our supporters who power it. You know, we actually pushed off our annual fundraising campaign, which powers our work, just so that we could do these emergent causes. We are a little late in asking for your support, but to be honest, we need it more than ever.
The Chochmat Nashim podcast, as you all know, has had a banner season, and we are looking forward to doing much more as we move forward. We know you like what you hear. Please support us here. We have grown, our work has grown, and the expenses have also grown.
If what we do means something to you, please help us do it.
Yes, please donate and share the campaign with the people you believe will want to support our work. People give when their friends trust and support a cause.
So help us get to our goal. And when we get to 45,000, it's actually 65,000 because two generous donors have offered $20,000 more to fund our work. You can find our campaign on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You know where to find us. That's where the campaign is.
Chochmatnashim. Hello, and welcome back to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Ann Gordon, here today with
Shoshana Keats-Jaskel.
We today are going to speak about current events again for a whole episode, because that is the way the news has been going. Beyond that, we're going to actually revisit a topic that we spoke about very recently, because there have been developments, and the developments are, I would say, worse than the original story, although that was pretty bad, so it's hard to equate them. We are talking, of course, about Chaim Walder and the aftermath. Let's take a small step back and recall what happened. Was here's a very popular author of children's books. He was known to be a therapist, although unlicensed, particularly in the Haredi world, but his books certainly had much further reach into the Orthodox world of all stripes of Orthodoxy. And there's a fairly extensive and very well-researched and supported and verified expose in Haaretz that he was, I don't know what, raping, molesting, abusing women, children, boys and girls, including people that he had come in contact with via his work as a therapist, an unlicensed therapist, etc. So this, Shanda, this terrible, terrible situation broke a few weeks ago, and we talked about it then. It was bad. It is bad. Right. And there was a strong response from the Orthodox world, a surprisingly strong response in terms of taking his books off the shelves and taking him off the air on a radio show and his column out of the newspaper and so on. Done. Except for it wasn't done, because then he was called to a din Torah, meaning there's a Beit Din in Tzfat headed by Rav Shmuel Eliyahu, who's a very well-known, very well-respected Orthodox rabbi. This part should go without saying. And they called him to account for 22 accounts of reported abuse. And Walder refused to show up. The court adjudicated the case and said that it is incontrovertible guilt, overwhelming, and there was nothing to mitigate against the mounting and terrible evidence against him. He refused to show up. That Din Torah was in Tzfat on Sunday, December 26th. On Monday, December 27th, Chaim Walder was found in the cemetery near, he apparently had lost a child to illness a few years ago, and he was found with self-inflicted gunshot wounds, suicide. And we should note that he had used suicide as a threat in his manipulation of his victims, where, you know, women have testified that he said, if you make this public, if you go to the police, if you go to the rabbis, if you go to anybody, I will kill myself. So he seems to have done so. And the world, of course, has now exploded all over again in a whole different kind of variety of ways. All of it is terrible, but some of the responses, I think, have been in some ways providing some measure of hope for where we are going as a community in terms of our communal thorough intolerance for this kind of child abuse, molestation, etc. So that kind of like strong negative anti-response to this whole thing is refreshing and I think very valid and valuable. And then we've seen other responses that not only are not inspiring and do not provide hope, but are rather dismal. And I think very painful to understand this rather deep divide between different elements of the same society that is affected by these events.
What I find, Anne, is that there's a real dissonance between the way people in their homes are responding and how leadership is responding. And not only that, but also I think there's some measure of dissonance between what's happening in Israel and what's happening in America. Not that I know what everyone has said, of course, but I am privy to whether it's anything from cross currents to Rabbi Eisenman from Passaic, his very strong letter, very unequivocal, which is a positive thing. When this type of a thing is discussed, you have to be unequivocal. Child abuse is wrong. You need to report. You need to protect your children. These types of strong statements are those that we look for from leaders. Unfortunately, here in Israel, and this is, God, it's funny when you say it happened a few weeks ago, because I, you know, on the one hand, I live in English online with a lot of, you know, audience and friends abroad. And on the other hand, I live here and I just see the difference in what's happening. And so specifically when Walder's funeral wound up being like for a celebrity and not as someone who was an abuser, when people gave glowing hespedim, when Yetidna Eman came out with a column that praised him, Zichrono Levracha, and no one mentioned his abuse, the Haredi street and activists were furious. And I actually was sitting in the Knesset dealing with a whole other bill about women and pictures being torn down when Hila, who's our deputy director, showed me the news. She's like, Walder hit the bed, like he committed suicide. And I was like, it was so shocking. And from that moment, she's just on her phone looking at WhatsApp groups, and she's getting more and more upset. I said to her, what's wrong? And she said, people are saying we killed him. People are saying we shamed him into killing himself, and they're not talking about what he did. And these are teachers. My son's teacher is on this group, and they're talking about telling the kids about Lashon Hara. And days afterwards, she was just beside herself with, what do we do about the fact that the lesson coming out of this isn't protect your children, who's with your children, who is alone with young girls as a therapist, quote unquote, rather don't speak Lashon Hara. And she and a number of other Haredi activists came together and said, absolutely not, this isn't happening. Because they all had that same reaction of, what? This is what we're taking away from it? Lashon Hara? And so a bunch of Haredi activists actually got together and crafted a strong response, very, very strong, visually strong and text-wise strong. And they created a flyer with, I'm sure anyone who's listening to this has seen this flyer, with a little girl with a man's hand over her mouth. And he has one of those bracelets that says, Lashon Hara lo medaber elai, which means slander doesn't speak to me, and also means Lashon Hara, don't speak it to me. So it's like this visual of people shaming children into being quiet about things that have unfortunately, you know, happened to them and they've been hurt. And she said to me, Hila said to me, all I can think of is the little boy in class who's been hurt and who hears these lessons on Lashon Hara and thinks, thank God I didn't tell anyone. I can never tell anyone. And this group of activists came together. They put down forward this flyer. On one side, it's the little girl. On the other side, it's very gentle wording about the dangers of abuse and how Lashon Hara is not speaking out about having been hurt or speaking out for people who have been hurt is not Lashon Hara. And it has sources and text and Rambams and 320,000 flyers. I was actually one of the people who distributed it all over cities throughout the country, from Tzfat to Arad to Dimona, which is up and down for those who don't know, and in the middle. And the response has been tremendous. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. We've discussed this before. I'm proud to say that Chochmat Nashim has become kind of the face of the campaign, even though we're not Haredi, but we were asked to please be the platform on which funds were raised. In 2 days, there was over 100,000 shekel in that account.
But see, I think it's important to note, Shoshana, that part of the reason that Chochmat Nashim becomes the interview face of the campaign is because the Haredi activists still don't want to show face. And I'm not talking about erasing women in that capacity. I'm talking about the question of what is the conversation in the Haredi street. And I do think it is changing. And I do think it changes slowly. And I think that the momentum here is very serious because everybody has to have an opinion. Walder was too prominent in people's homes. We've already talked about how he wasn't in our homes. We didn't have the books, but Walder was too prominent in people's homes for anybody to not have an opinion. So some people are keeping the books because there's good in them. I mean, some people are refusing to believe anything bad about him, which I don't understand at all, given the Beit Din, meaning you don't have to believe the secular Haaretz article if you don't want to, although everything I know says that that was a very well vetted article. They couldn't have gone to press without it. But even leaving that aside, there's a reputable Beit Din. Oh, you want to say the Beit Din is not reputable? At some point, there's so much smoke. Don't you think there was fire? And some people will still say, no, I don't know enough. It's too speculative. And Nebuch, the man, is not here to defend himself. There's all
exactly.
kinds of
exactly.
There's all kinds of things that a person can say to deny. I'm saying that pretty strongly, but I don't think that this is the time for equivocation. I agree with you 100% on that. And yet we have to acknowledge that across the home, there are people who toss the books immediately, burn the books, whatever, had serious, intensive, terrible conversations with their children, not abuse conversations, but about what happens when there's a bad guy in your very midst. Right? That's a hard conversation to have, especially somebody who has written books that you, the child, let's say, has revered. Fine. On the other side of the spectrum, there are these people who are denying it altogether. But I think that the focus of all of this really ends up needing to be said to all of these people who are raising questions, Lashon Hara this, authority that, he's not here. Well, I'm sorry, but there are victims. And so then I will say that Blima Marcus, she's got a very strong online presence, said it very, very well. She says, right now, the work needed is to teach adults how to believe the victims. Right. To believe victims and to be accountable for predators and rapists in the community. This idea that we're so frum, this could never happen in our world, is terribly dangerous because sadly and terribly, it happens in this world. And maybe even it fosters it. That's a whole separate conversation to what extent the insular world fosters this kind of problem. But the fact that it's here is not debatable. And that's, I think, the problem, that when people who I know to be so careful at bending over backwards, to be careful, to not judge somebody unfavorably. What do you do when that person has presented themselves in the least favorable light? Do you still deny that that's what's going on? And the problem is that then when you do, when you give them credit, when you give Walder credit, you're undermining the victims.
Exactly. And that's exactly what these activists were saying, that they were devastated to see that in the Haredi media and in his funeral, he was being venerated. And they said, this is killing the victims again. And we need to tell the victims we believe them and tell the kihila, the community, exactly what you're saying.
The proof of this is the worst part of the story. Shoshana, maybe you'll tell this part of the news because I just can't. I just can't.
Well, yeah. So one of Walder's victims, unfortunately, I think it was the day after his funeral. The days are a little bit blurry at this moment, but she unfortunately ended her life because she could not handle seeing him held up as Zichrono Levracha and as a wonderful person who was shamed by Lashon Hara and killed by Lashon Hara. And as a matter of fact, it was reported to me yesterday or 2 days ago that another victim unfortunately did end her life as well.
Oh, no. Now this is live. I did not know that. I had not heard that. But yeah. This is the problem. This is not just equivocation. Some of what has been happening is indeed veneration. You laud this terrible, terrible human being and the people to whom he was most terrible, then, you know, have the ground literally cut out from under them. So yes, this is the, you know, people say, oh, it's a matter of life and death, and then don't really mean that. And in this case, it really is a matter of life and death.
And by the way, I do think that there's a lot coming down the pipeline. I think there's a lot that's going to come out now. And if you are not already more aware and suspicious, you're going to be in for a big shock because it's going to start coming out like dominoes now.
I have that feeling as well. And I find the most terrible part, of course, which we're not going to really go into, is how do you protect your children? That's why I say, like, the protection side of things is a different conversation. And I think there've been a lot of important publications and posts and so on by the experts in the field, which we are not, right? We're just broadcasting these events and the need to get this word out, because that's, first of all, that's what we do. And secondly, some of this is about getting the word out, right? If
yes.
More people function in silence, then that's exactly the problem. I want to take note, there have been many very valuable Times of Israel blog posts reacting to Walder, because of course it's on people's minds. You say so much time has passed, but it feels like so little time has passed. It's the topic of the day for a very large swath of the people who write. It's been ongoing, meaning some people wrote in the first day or two, and now more and more people are writing, including friends, family, all of that. One of these posts was written by Yael Leibowitz, who is, I think, fundamentally a teacher of Tanakh, and she's a very excellent writer. And she spoke about when we come to address difficult texts in the classroom. She wrote about specifically the story of David and Bathsheba. How much do we, as educators, as other people in the community, when you come to talk about any story that doesn't feel like it has anything to do with this, do you take the position of David HaMelech, King David, clearly couldn't have done wrong because Chazal said that he didn't sin? Meaning, she's got a whole blog post. Go read it there, right? Well, we can try to include the link or whatever in the show notes. It begins with a discussion of Big Bird. So if you search for Yael Leibowitz and Big Bird, you will find this. But this idea that you have to believe people. Why does it begin with a discussion of Big Bird? Because Big Bird's best friend, Snuffleupagus, used to be invisible. Sesame Street made him visible because there were children, and this is not the religious world, it's not the Jewish world, they were concerned that children were going to think that they would not be believed, or that it was too terrible for them not to be believed about this kind of thing when they needed to come forward. So then she takes it a step further and says, what happens when you're talking to a classroom of people or any kind of audience where you don't know who's in your audience ever? We don't know who's in our audience now, some of you anyway. And you say something like, well, that's all fine. Right, which is sometimes what happens in the way classical texts are taught, because they're taking one message and making it the message. Like, it's one thing to say it's one message. That's a fine, legitimate educational point. But what about the facts on the ground? If you talk about the story of David and Bathsheba, what happened? David calls for Bathsheba to be brought to him. She's a married woman. He is the king. He can do whatever he wants. And there's a whole, so many, you know, days of learning that you could do on this topic. But what happens to somebody who's sitting in that classroom, who isn't believed, who knows that the person who's been abusing her is reported to be a big tzaddik, just like David HaMelech? When we say that we need to pay attention to the victims, we need to pay attention to the victims, even when the story around the potential incident of abuse does not sound plausible. What do you mean King David did such a thing? But he did. And he says in the text, not in Chazal, not in the Gemara, but in the Navi, he says, he sinned, I sinned. He recognizes that. So I realize it's been a little bit of a roundabout, but
let's just focus on what that means. David HaMelech said, I sinned. Chazal's like, anyone who says David HaMelech sinned is wrong, right? So there's a lot going on just in those two statements. Number one, David HaMelech agreed, I did, I sinned, I was wrong. Then Chazal's going saying, you can't say that. You can't say it. They're silencing people who are learning from those of the greatest among us.
So I would say as follows. The Gemara says, Kol Homer David Chata Eino Eletoeh, that anybody who says that David sinned is in error, right? Meaning the focus, I think, I believe this, I interpret this, that the problem here is if you come forward and say that David HaMelech sinned, meaning he said he sinned, David said he sinned. And because of that, right, he's established himself as a Baal Tshuva, so to speak, right? He's acknowledged it. Perhaps we can understand that Chazal are saying, don't kick it up in his face. I haven't heard anybody, Walder, come forward and say, yes, I was wrong. In fact, he did the opposite. He's stuck by his story.
I feel like I don't think that we're even just comparing Walder to King David for a second.
God forbid,
just
yes,
separate this for one second, please. I think what is important here is that we have anshei chinuch, educators, with whom we entrust our children. From Gan Age to Midrasha and Yeshiva, right, where they're learning. In the past couple of days, we have unfortunately been witness to, me personally, a very angry witness to, two specific Anglo, otherwise beloved Torah teachers speaking to their audiences with horrible messages about this whole thing. And I do feel strongly that we must tell them they're wrong and tell our kids. When people tell you not to talk about sexual abuse, when people tell you that believing victims is Lashon Hara, they are wrong. I'm sorry.
They are wrong.
But they are wrong. You can't tell someone that believing someone who says she was hurt or he was hurt is lashon hara. It's just not true. That is not true. And so we have to be unequivocal about this. When someone comes and says to you, yesterday I got a phone call on my phone, my cell phone, because of the campaign, our phone number is on the campaign. My phone number is my phone number. I should probably not be telling that publicly, but in any case, I got a phone call to my phone of a young woman who said, I saw the campaign, I saw the flyers, I was abused. And I am obviously not the address to help, but I couldn't get off the phone with her. I need to make sure that A, she was okay, and B, that I could put her in touch with the right person. When someone comes to you and says, I've been hurt, your obligation isn't to say, are you sure? Maybe you misinterpreted
it. I'm sorry for laughing, but no, exactly, but right? I'm 100% with you. I'm laughing because the implausibility of that being someone's reaction. And yet that's what's happening because it's not in their face. They're not on the phone with a person acknowledging that she's been a victim. It's more theoretical. It's more distant. It's so horrible. Nobody wants to countenance it. So then let's just not. Let's pretend it doesn't happen. And we're in agreement that this is not the way to do it. And I want to say again, because I think that this was the upshot of Yael Leibowitz's blog post, but I think it's something that we all need to remember all the time. You never know who you're talking to. You never know. What you say can make somebody feel like, okay, I have to go crawl under a rock because nobody's going to believe me. Or it could be something that opens up the vistas for somebody to come forward and begin a process of healing. The power of how we talk to everybody, because it's not just teachers with audiences, it's how we talk to our friends. How many people have said, how many people do I now relate to in a different way because of the way they responded to this, both positive and negative? I don't want a bubble. I don't want just an echo chamber of what I'm saying. But if you're going to say something that is, as you say, as some educators have come forward and said, such reprehensible thoughts, I don't want to look to them with reverence anymore because they might be great in other ways, but they've kind of negated their own views because of this. I feel like everybody needs to be careful about what they say because everybody you're listening to or talking to could possibly have been a victim, could be a victim, could have somewhere to go. And frankly, I think that that has to be the focus. The rest of it, the lashon hara side of things, the power structure, the how we don't want to air dirty laundry. I mean, right, we're only talking the tip of the iceberg. And I feel like the emotions are riding so high that I'm not even as clear thinking about it as I might want to be because I feel like, but then there's this and then there's this and then there's that other thing because all of it right now is just hot and bad with some redeeming rays of light of how people are rallying to say, no, this is not okay. These educators who have spoken out in a way that doesn't make sense, they've said so strongly. You've said so strongly, but you've had very positive response to, let's say it, right? You were on Instagram and on Facebook with a video calling out the people who are not paying attention to what it means to have been abused and how we as a community need to react to that.
Yes. And I would say that's why to our audience who have children or may have children or even nieces, nephews, siblings, whatever it is, people that you know, and by the way, even friends, who may have been harmed in the past or know someone, the idea that speaking out is lashon hara has to end. That's the number one thing. That's the number one takeaway. Speaking out against someone who has harmed you or someone else is not lashon hara nekuda. That's first of all. Second of all, an educator who says, maybe this, maybe that, prevaricates, you know, we can only find someone guilty and a beit din in front of their accuser is appalling. Is appalling. How many accusers come to Bet Din? How many abusers agree to come to Bet Din? How many Bet Din agree to hear a case? I mean, stop it. You can't make the standards too hard to come to so that someone is found to be a danger to people, to be a danger to children. What exactly that means, there's Tahel for this, there's Magen for this, there's Amudim for this. There's a lot of wonderful organizations. If you want nitty gritties, maybe we'll put them, as you said, Anne, in the post, you know, we'll link to these organizations. But at the end of the day, number one, don't shame people who are speaking out. Number two, believe them. And number three, go to the right authorities and don't let educators tell you otherwise. For me, that's the cliff notes to this episode right now. Just one thing I want to add is that a lot of times when people address this issue and we're like so happy that they're actually addressing it, they seem to say like good things, right? Like, you know, of course we should believe survivors. And of course we this, but. And they sound so moderate. Like Rabbi Lev's Torah Shir to Mechlala was so moderate that you almost have to say, wait, what? On the one hand, there's so many good things sprinkled in. And on the other hand, the way that they're sprinkled and then negated makes it worse because you're walking away with a not clear message and a lot of, well, we would believe survivors except in which case, in the end of the day, you can't, right? Making it so impossible that the person who's listening to the shir walks away confused, not understanding, and opting to be quiet because they can't meet all of those standards. And so I think someone who's actually equivocating and going back and forth, like this Mishpacha article someone just sent me saying, I can't believe they finally said something and this is what they said. Point being, sometimes people are trying so hard to be so careful that they're actually making it worse. So if you want to know what to say or how to say it, speak to someone who knows, have them help you bring out the words that you want to say. And sometimes less is more.
The other thing I want to add, you know, our final words here, err on the side of caution. My problem here is that the erring on the side of caution has been lest we malign somebody's reputation as a tzaddik. Now, I again will say if there's that much smoke, then even if something is going too far, right? Meaning it's not really fire, it's just smoke, at least smoke. If we're going to err on the side of caution, and I believe wholeheartedly in this, then err on the side of listening to the victim. Because we know there are statistics about this. The number of people who are falsely accused, meaning the number of people who come forward to make a false accusation is very, very slim. Yes. Especially with people who otherwise, like, I'm not talking about in the acrimony of a terrible divorce. People can make all kinds of who knows what kind of accusations. I'm sure some of those or many of those are true as well. But that's not the point. We're talking about children. We're talking about otherwise happily married women. You can go read the accounts about what happened here. That's not my point. My point is that as we go forward, and we're always talking about going forward, and we want to be careful, believe the victims. Why believe the victims? What if you're wrong? What if they made it up? Okay, you know what? If one person made a false accusation amongst the way, way, way too many people who are not making false accusations, then we as a community, we as a world will have made great strides forward in the protection of people from really villains. You know, I think back to the, I don't know if you saw any of it, Shoshana, the trial of Larry Nassar, who is this vile doctor of the American Gymnastics Association. And he had like 150 victims. And all of these young, strong women came forward and testified against him. And if you saw any of the actual footage of it, right, the judge's face was just so horrified. And she's supposed to be balanced, a judge, making sure that she's unbiased. And then the facts speak for themselves, right? Like you can't remain parav in the face of some of this. And that's, I think, what we've been finding so terrible is how many people are equivocating. We keep saying this, you can't equivocate here. People are being so gentle and so generous.
It's misplaced kindness.
I look forward to the day when that will not be misplaced. I look forward to a day when we can worry more about the possibility of somebody being falsely accused. That day is not today. Today, I want to worry more about the victims. I want to worry more about protecting people from hearing horrible things because they've already been victimized and then they get it a second time around. Yes, okay, I'm just spewing now, but that's where I'm at.
A lot of people are in a lot of shock, but I really, really do hope that we all, as a community, come out of this the way that we should, which is as a healthier, more protected community.
We know you have opinions on this because everybody does. Come talk to us on our Facebook page, on our Instagram, on our Twitter, CHOCHMATNASHIM.
Thank you for listening. Please go to our page and donate to our campaign. Help us do what we do so that we can be there for you. Can you hear us now?